Good afternoon and welcome everyone to the Bus and Rail Subcommittee meeting today on Monday, March 11th, 2024. As you just heard, this meeting is being recorded and the meeting audio will be placed on our website, which is wmata.com. I would like to share a few helpful tips. For people who are joining through phone calls, you can press star 6 to mute or unmute yourself. If you would like to make comments, you can virtually raise or lower hands by pressing star 9. Anybody who's on the video conference, you can click on the speaker icon to mute or unmute yourself. And if you go under, if you go and click on raise hand icon, that will raise or lower your virtual hands. If everybody is able to practice these tools and you use these tools, that will be helpful, because then we know that somebody's trying to make comments and we can have one speaker at a time. Just a reminder that we have two American Sign Language interpreters with us on this meeting. Therefore, when speaking, please state your name and then your comment, because it helps the interpreters in doing their job well. It also helps everyone who's on the phone calls knowing who the speaker is, and when people listen to the meeting audio, it helps them knowing who the speakers were at the time. We recently started a little description of the speakers. So I would also request anybody who makes a comment or our guest speakers, if you would please describe yourselves briefly. For instance, I'm a female, Asian Indian. I wear reading glasses. I have long hair. Just a small brief description would be helpful. Chair Calabia, I would, I can
yes.
Go and take the roll call and or read the agenda first and then take the roll call of the committee members.
Sure.
Okay, great. So before I start reading the agenda, I would go ahead and share my screen. So if you would bear with me for a quick moment. Okay. Could somebody just confirm that my screen is visible?
I see it.
Thank you, Rico and Tina. So after I finish reading the agenda out loud, we will go ahead and take the roll call of the committee members. After that, Chair Calabia will go through the review and approval of today's meeting agenda and last month's meeting minutes. Afterwards, we have Lynn Bowersox and her team to give us information about the 8,000 rail car series, the soft mock-up that's coming up. At 4:45, we have Arlington County team, including Diane Trent and Paul Monier and Kirk Dan. They're going to give us update about floating bus stops in their county. And at 5:20, we have a team to discuss Metro bus open stroller area, and that's obviously within our buses. At 5:45, pardon me. In the team, we have George Harris, perhaps, and Meera Patel, Anthony Harris, and Christopher Conway. This is the team that will be presenting us the topic of Metrobus open stroller area. At 5:45, we will take any public comments, and the meeting is scheduled to adjourn at 6 p.m. I would stop sharing my screen now. And we have three guest speakers today. I would request you to please describe the details that you might be sharing, because we do have some members who are blind and some members who will have low vision for their convenience. As you know, that this meeting is open to the public. We may have some members of the public who are blind or have low vision. So if you can describe your presentation slides in detail, that would be very, very helpful for all our members. And at this point, I would go ahead and take the roll call. So AAC members, please confirm your presence.
Alert. Audio now unmuted.
Azar Otura. Darnese Bush. Tino Calabia.
Present.
Thank you. Vanessa Coles.
Alert. Present. Kevin.
Thank you. Rico Dancy.
Present here.
Thank you. Tawan Farmer. Debbie Fisher.
I'm here.
Thank you. Marcy Goldstein.
I'm here.
Thank you. Timothy Howard. Steve Caffin.
Present.
Thank you. Thomas Mangram. Thomas actually informed that he will not be able to join today. Philippa Mazzell.
Present.
Thank you. Sandy Newzo.
Present.
Thank you. Phil Posner.
Present also.
Thank you. Doris Ray. Denise Rush.
Present.
Thank you. Paul Semelford. Patrick Sheehan. Kelly Simono. And Philip Weintraub. Okay, that concludes our roster for today's meeting. And Chair Calabia, at this point, I would ask for you to move the meeting forward. You have the floor.
Sure. Is there any objection to the agenda as Anu showed us on the screen? Hearing no objections, the agenda is approved. The prior meeting minutes, do I hear any objection to the minutes as drafted by Anu? Hearing no objections, the minutes are approved. We now have Lynn Bowersox and her team. Lynn, it's yours.
Thank you, Chairman. And just want to recognize, I think Stanley Soy is on the call, and he's the head of our 8K program, and he and the team are doing such a great job, and some of them are out in the field today getting ready for what's going to be a really exciting Fleet of the Future Expo next week. And so in just a minute, Anu is going to share one slide, because I just want to take the group through what you will see if you go out on the National Mall. So between March 20th and April 3rd, just outside of the Smithsonian Rail Station stop on the National Mall for the Cherry Blossom Festival, we will be displaying Metro's Fleet of the Future. And that includes our 8000 series next gen rail car soft mockup, as well as an electric bus, a 60 foot electric bus. And so this soft mockup is something that the committee has had a lot of input into, right? And we've been talking for almost a year now about the design of the 8000 series rail car. And this soft mockup is really exciting because it's the first time that Metro's been able to do this in a very public display. What we did with the 7000 series is we had focus groups that we would take to the design stages. Putting this out on the National Mall during the Cherry Blossom Festival is really historic for Metro. So we haven't done this since the 1000 series, as a matter of fact, during the President Johnson's administration. So that tells you that you're living through history. So this 82 foot soft mockup is actually a replica of two halves of two different rail cars joined by open gangway. It is about 10 feet wide, 16 feet total, with some of the side configurations that we've got that I'll talk through in just a minute. It weighs more than 15,000 pounds, and it's about 11 feet high. So for those who can see, there is a ramp that's being constructed that will allow people who need assistance of walkers or wheelchairs, or who use other devices, to access the soft mockup. And excuse me, once inside, you know, it is fully accessible. Now, again, I just want to point out, this is a wood structure. It is not an actual rail car. And so what's happening is, this has been built by Hitachi and their vendors to give us a sense of the space and the layout of what will be the next rail car. It doesn't have all the bells and whistles. If you roll up into this thing, you will see stickers in place of some of the digital displays, for example. And you will see a different seat than the one we've actually selected for the 8000 series car. But you'll be able to see the placement of things. You'll be able to sense the space of things. You'll be able to see how things are laid out. And since the committee has had so much input into the design, we really are looking forward to you all going through this and giving us more feedback as the public does, as we finalize the design. Now, I will also say that this is mostly completed. There is an opportunity in the final design process for a couple of small tweaks, but nothing big. No big changes at this point. We've worked through all of the major components of the design. So this is really the final, you know, icing on the cake, as it were. And I am going to stop here and just answer any questions that you have. But again, open to the public, March 20th through April 3rd, from 9 a.m. to 5 p.m. daily. There will be staff there every day to answer questions and assist. We have a lot of really fun parts of this exhibit, including the baby bus and different things for kids and historic photos and a metro quiz and all kinds of things to keep this very interactive when you come to go through the display. And we really want to get not just our customers, but also our current customers, but customers of the future excited about what they're going to see in when they are riding Metro in the next few years. So let me just stop there and certainly take any questions that you have. And if you have anything that's too hard, I think Stan will join me and chime in.
And
sure, Lynn.
I just want to add, following Lynn, that because there is an opportunity for full 2 weeks, as we have done in past for various site visits with the AAC, we will try to coordinate, and I will be sending out an email, hopefully right after this meeting or first thing in the morning tomorrow. So please do look out for that email with some dates and timings where we can have the entire or as many AAC members come visit the site as a group. So Chair Calabia, go ahead, please.
Thanks, Anu. Lynn, back last April, you showed us diagrams of an A car and a B car. The A car has the operator's cab. Is the mock-up that you're showing us now with or without the operator's cab?
I believe it does have the operator's cab, Stan. Can you just confirm that?
Sure. Hey, everybody. I'm Stanley Choi. Yes, it does. The A car does have a mock-up of the operator's cab.
So that means that there are fewer seats or standing arrangements. As I recall, the A-car had, it was many more seats than with the B-car. So there is that difference. And the 7000 series, I think, had 110 people total. Yes, the A car that you showed us last spring had 102 people, and the B car had 120 people. Are there many differences between what we're looking at now and what we looked at last April in terms of the number of people, riders that are accommodated?
No, it really has not changed. I mean, I think that what we talked about last spring included the open gangway. And again, there is some seat changes there at the end of the cars in terms of the directional facing of the seats. But I think we talked through all of that.
In short, though, this is the one with the operator cap. Rail cars without the operator cap would be longer, or at least perhaps accommodate more people than the A-cab does?
Yes.
Okay. Well, why don't we open it up for other members to comment or to raise questions? I don't see who has their hands up.
So sure. I can help with that. It looks like Steve Caffin does and Vanessa Coles.
And then, Sandy Newsom is the first one.
Yep.
And then Vanessa Coles and Steve Caffin. Thank you, Lynn.
Thank you, Anu.
Thanks, Lynn.
Sandy, go ahead.
Hi, Lynn.
Hi, Sandy. Good to see you.
Thanks for joining us again. So it looks like it's sort of 1.5 car mock-up. Remind me, an AB car combination would then join to the next AB combination with chains, not an open gangway. Am I correct?
That's correct. So there's two cars that are connected through the gangway, and that's one pair. And then there's a new design for the inner car barrier that's forthcoming, and then the next pair come in. So it's not the exact same chains that we have seen on the sevens. We are awaiting the new design to come forward so the committee can see that on the inner car barriers. That's still a work in progress.
Okay, so we can't see that at the mock-up at this time.
I don't think so. Stanley, is there anything new from the sub-vendor that we have on that?
No, the soft mock-up does not include the inner car barriers like you mentioned, Lynn. That's still being worked through for both the 7K fleet as well as the 8K fleet.
Yeah, so we'll have to do that separately. But Sandy, I think what we'll do is we'll bring the committee out to a platform, because I know your guidance on that was really key about exactly where that inner car barrier falls on the platform. And I think that's what we'll want to experience with the new design.
Okay, thank you. Keep us posted.
Mm-hmm. Yes, ma'am.
Okay, thank you.
Alert. Audio now unmuted.
Vanessa, go ahead.
Okay, hi, I'm Vanessa, African-American, middle-aged woman. I have curls in my hair, and I have on a t-shirt. So my question is, years ago, there was a fatal accident on the trains, and there was smoke inhalation. What has changed or upgraded to make sure that if there's some bad smell or anything that's coming into one card or all the card, has there been some kind of prevention for that? And also, I wanted to know, as far as the audio, what can blind or deaf individuals look forward to on these new models? Thank you.
So thank you for both of those questions. The L'Enfant incident that you spoke about, where Ms. Glover suffered a fatal condition, was less about what was the smoke on board the train than the smoke in the station. And the focus of the NTSB investigation was about the use of the fans, the tunnel fans that we have to evacuate smoke away from the passengers on trains and in stations. And so there's a whole new process for using those fans that's been put in place since that terrible accident. And it's been very effective in removing smoke more quickly when there is a smoke condition in the tunnel or in the station. I would also just point out that since COVID, we've upgraded the filters on board our rail cars so that there's better air quality on board the trains, and the filtration of the HVAC filters is a higher MERV number. It's MERV. It's a technical term for the filters that they use on board the rail cars. And so even that was upgraded during COVID, and that will apply to the new rail cars as well. With respect to what people who are blind or have low vision can see on these cars or can experience on these cars, I would say that these will be the first all digital cars in the system. And so with respect to audio, you know, everything that we have displayed, you know, will have the ADA required audio component. So I think that it will be better in terms of wayfinding and station ahead, that kind of thing. The audio coming from the trains on the platform will also be of higher quality as people are waiting. I just think the technology has improved and the audio quality has improved since the last cars. And I'll just ask Stan if there's anything else you want to point to in terms of improved audio. I know that the emergency features are there for safety with respect to audio. Anything else that you can think of that would be of interest?
No, nothing to add, Lynn. Nothing more than what you've stated. I just want to reiterate that there are a number of digital screens on the 8K as compared to the 7K for enhanced graphics, as well as much larger screens. On the 8K, there's quite a few larger screens to help customers do wayfinding.
Yeah, that's a good point. And so even the maps will be digital on these cars. We won't be replacing them with paper maps. And so one hopes that that will, you know, also offer contrast and lettering of a larger size, which may be of help to some.
Okay, great. Thank you.
Sure.
Okay, thank you, Vanessa. Next is
Control Y.
And then Philippa.
Face. All alert. Hands now lowered.
Okay, thank you. Lynn, congratulations. It's remarkable.
Hi, Steve. We're very excited.
I'm thrilled. We threw a lot at you over several meetings, and I'm sure you heard from others too. And, you know, I like the hybrid nature of the seats, which is going to give a lot more space to people to truly, for the first time, move into the cars. You know what I mean, one side adjacent and the other side sticking out. Actually, one side for the commuters who maybe will not be leaving their seats, and another for people who need in and out. And so that's great. Well, I want to let you know, the Environmental Film Festival, which is actually the largest in the world, is taking place about the same time as your show. It begins around the 20th, and I think it ends on the 30th. And so in the presentation that you're putting next to the mock-up, you might add some environmental-friendly things. And if you wish, I could, through Anu, give you the contact of the director of the festival. And, you know, they may make an announcement in some of the presentations if you add some environmentally-friendly aspects to it.
That is awesome. You know, the cars, so a couple of things. Thank you for offering to make that connection. We will take you up on that. If you would provide Anu with the information, I'd be happy to follow up and cross promote with the environmental film organizers. You know, not just is transit more green compared to driving, but also this equipment is more green. It's going to have aluminum shells. That helps the environment. It's going to, in terms of, you know, using recycled product and also what it's ultimate disposition will be. It will also use less electricity than the previous generation. So again, an energy saver. So in many ways, those two things really do connect very nicely. And people who care about transit and care about the environment, you know, are sometimes the same people. So we'd certainly like to talk to their audience and encourage them to go through the display.
Okay, and I have a quick question. The maps, you know, I find in the 7000 series, the digital maps are just a little small. You know, the paper maps are, of course, much larger. The digital ones, you really have to almost lean over on occasion over somebody who's sitting there in order to see them. And so I'm wondering if that's being taken into account, and also if they're going to be placed near all of the doors.
Yeah, so the displays are bigger in some instances than what you're used to on the sevens for the video display. And I believe, and Stanley's gonna correct me on this because I don't know the content of every single screen, but I believe that the new iPhone-like displays that are near the doors have the capability to display a rail map. Is that right, Stan?
That's correct, Lynn. So we do have displays in all the vestibule areas where the doors are. We also have a larger door pocket display. That's about 43 inches, I believe. There's one that's 43 inches, one that's 32 inches. Significantly larger than what's on the 7K. They have the capability of also displaying the system map. The ones in the door will be utilized, I believe, more for route mapping. So in other words, what line you're running on and what the next stations are going to be. But in general, yes, there are certain screens on the 8K that are larger than the 7K.
And
Absolutely.
if you remember, Steve, on the eights, you know, those screens by the doors are also turned in a different direction, so you can see them from a different position in the car. They're not just against the car walls. They're sort of out where the glass screens are, and so I think you'll have a better vantage point as well, and won't feel like you're having to crowd a neighbor to see the screen.
Thank you, Lynn. Once again, congratulations.
Thank you. It's really Stan and the team who are doing all the hard stuff. And thanks to all of you who have had so much input into this. I think it's going to be the best rail car, not only for Metro, but the best in the nation. And that's what we're shooting for. World class.
All right. Thank you, Steve. Philippa, go ahead.
Hi, good afternoon, everyone. Hi, Lynn. I was just going to say I'm really looking forward to this new rail car coming. I didn't know if it was going to happen based on all these budget issues. I also am looking forward. I think that's a wonderful marketing and information tool to put the mock-up on the National Mall like that. And I will be going. I was going to ask which exit I should take out of Smithsonian, but since Anu said she'll arrange for us to get there, I'll just work with that. So anyway, just great, and I'm glad you listened to us, and you all seem to have great ideas on what you're going to do with the car. And a little bit off topic, but not too much off topic, I just wanted to congratulate, thank you, thank you, thank you. I went to L'Enfant Plaza, which I usually avoid like the plague on the lower level, and I was shocked to see station ahead signs on the pillars down there. Which was a big help. And then you have the electronic boards that tell us which train is coming and where they stop. And it took all the fear out of it. I am no longer afraid of the lower level of L'Enfant Plaza going north, north, south, or west, or whichever way it goes.
As a daily user of L'Enfant Plaza station, I certainly understand exactly what you just said, and I will pass your compliments on to my colleague Sarah Meyer, who has worked so hard to improve the wayfinding signage there and in other rail stations. I think it's a whole, I mean, she's the head of
Oh my
customer
God.
experience, and I think that's a good title because I think it really does transform the customer experience there. And
Yes.
I'm pleased to hear that it's been such a positive thing for you. So thank you for
Okay.
sharing.
And only one thing I might add, and I don't know how you could do it, but when you're in the center where the one escalator is going up to the north, the green belt side, and the other's going to what the hunting, whatever the other one is, side north and south. And it does say north and south, but I don't know that most people would know, especially I've dealt with people in DC, they don't know north from south. I have to tell them north is toward Maryland, toward Silver Spring, and south is toward Virginia. So I was just wondering, I don't know if there's any way to maybe put that on over those escalators that this is the escalator to take up for the green belt or what green belt side or whichever other side. So anyway, that would
I'll
be the
pass that
last thing.
along. Thank you.
Okay. All right. Thank you.
Okay, thank you, Philippa. Chair Calabi, I see your hand is up, and then Sandy Nuzzo.
Yes, I was asking, going to ask about security. The open gangways trains in New York have security cameras, and it's really needed for security given the crimes that are committed both in New York's subways and in our metro rail stations and around the country. Will there be adequate numbers of security cameras in each train?
Yeah, we'll have full view of what's going on board on the cameras on the 8000 series. Not only that, we're retrofitting the 6000 series rail cars with cameras, all of which provide real-time feeds into the Metro Control Center. So we can see in real time what's going on. As you know, and I really appreciate the committee's support for our funding, but depending on how much funding we get going forward, once we have enough 8,000 series cars, we'll be able to retire the twos and the threes, the oldest in our fleet. And so we'll be left with six, sevens, and eights. That will make up our fleet, and they will all be equipped with onboard cameras.
We also recommended that there be a camera which would allow the operator to see the full length of the train. Is there going to be something to improve the vision along the train of the operator?
Do you mean when they look out the window and see the length of the train?
Well, yeah. Generally, that's what they've been doing. But it might help to have cameras that would show on a screen in the operator's cab the full length of the screen. The full length of the station or the crane in the station?
I have not heard about that, but let me turn to Stan. Stan, any word on that?
Sure, Lynn. We are currently discussing with the manufacturer to incorporate or have the possibility of incorporating exterior cameras on certain doors along the length that would give the operator the ability to view either length of the train or specific doors.
So you do understand what I mean, and you're looking into it, and hopefully you'll be able to do that, because up to now, many trains around the country are limited because the operator can only look out the window. With respect to wheelchairs, I think in the diagrams you showed us back in April, the A train had two wheelchairs, I think they were positioned where seats are, but the seats go up and down. And the B train could accommodate four wheelchairs, again, with seats that went up and down so that the chair can fit in that space. What's the present arrangement?
So I think that the final decision on that was not to have folding chairs. And there was a real vibrant discussion around that, a very robust discussion. While the folding chairs increase the flexibility of the space, it also encourages people to sit in wheelchair spaces, which is not preferred. And we also had concern about maintenance of multiple seat types. That was again, this is, you know, we're coming to the very end of the design process where these final decisions get made. So I'm going to turn to Stanley and see what the latest is, but that was the last conversation that I was a part of.
So you're correct, Lynn. The wheelchair accessible areas do not have fold up chairs. They're dedicated to, wheelchairs, access, as well as, strollers and, possibly the bikes incorporated. I think strollers, bikes, and the luggage was a separate area, but you are correct that the wheelchair accessible areas are not fold-up chairs.
Okay. I know that we have a guest on, and I guess during public comments, she'll ask about a suggestion she had made while she was a member. Lynn's team won't be here during the public comment session, is it legitimate for us to have Mary Kay address her question?
Sure, we can take rest of the AAC members, and if time permits, we can definitely do that. Sure. Then. Okay, Sandy Newsell, then Steve Caffin, Doris Ray, and Vanessa, are you raising your hand again? So, okay, so Sandy, go ahead.
Yes, two quick things to piggyback onto what Steve Caffin said about environmentally friendliness of the 8K series cars. Perhaps you can comment about the material that the seats are made of. They will or they won't exude bad organic chemicals. It's just a thought. And I want to piggyback on what Philippa Mazzell said about the wayfinding digital boards on the platforms, next train coming, and the direction and the final end stop. I love those displays, and I think they're great on all of the lines except perhaps the north indicator on the red line because both ends of the red line are to the north. So perhaps when you're talking about red line, instead of saying north, say what's the end of the line? Just a thought, if you could convey that to Sarah Meyer. It's been on my mind. So thank you.
Thank you, I will. I know that at one point the some members of the RAC had suggested a compass rose to try to help people, and even that didn't help us tell north from south. So I do appreciate the creative thinking around that.
Okay, thank you, Sandy. Steve, go ahead.
Thank you. I have two questions. One is, I'd just be interested in your just talking through how, you know, how WMATA, how the committees decided on two-car gangways versus no gangways versus total gangways. And if the design permits in the future opening up additional cars, whether that's, you know, part of the design. In effect, you just pull some kind of door open. And I have something else, but that's by far the most important.
Sure. So, Steve, let me go back. Sandy, we'll get back to you on what the industrial standards are for the chemical emissions fabric that we're using on the seats. I know we're meeting all of the requirements there, and we'll send you something back through the chairman on that. Steve, the discussion on the open gangways is really centered around two factors. One is we wanted to be able to have more 6-car trains or 8-car trains as we need them to accommodate ridership demand. And as you know, the current 7000 series consists are predominantly 8-car trains. Splitting those into sixes is not how they were designed, not what they're intending, but today we're doing that on a limited basis to accommodate the change in ridership. So we want to have operational flexibility to run these as 6 or 8s. And so having them joined in pairs and not the whole train length is part of that thinking. The other thing is, frankly, maintenance facilities. And so the lifts that we have to raise up the rail cars to do maintenance underneath have limits. And so unlike New York, where they can put multiple cars up on lifts, we can't do quads and 8-car trains. So we have to do 2 at a time today. So there will be an investment required going down the road to expand on that, to allow our facilities to be retrofitted to accommodate more connected rail cars going forward into the future. But we do imagine that that will be necessary. It's a funding and space requirement that we're going to have to tackle.
You know what? I find it attractive because of the safety aspect. There are two thoughts. One is, if it's totally open gangway, well, you've got protect. You just move as quickly as you can to other places, or yell out a help. On the other hand, I feel safer if I'm in an area that's confined, and I know that if I'm in that area and it looks safe to me, at least until the next station, I'm secure. So you have, you have two approaches, and I think you've done a really good balancing job in moving us along with gangways, but keeping us where we are. And just a quickie, this is one sentence. I hate to monopolize. You know, the problem with the word Ashburn without a clarification, I've noticed when I stand on the trains with people with bags looking like they're going to Dulles, is there's very little right now that tells them Dulles. We named it Ashburn. It was named Ashburn as opposed to Ashburn via Dulles or something like that. And the only place where there's a name right now I see is in the polls as people walk through the turnstiles going down. and the term IAD is used. So I'm just raising it as it may not even be your area, but I've seen a bit of confusion with that word and where people are going. So thank you very much.
Well, thank you, and I'll pass it along to Sarah. Mr. Chairman, I'll just add, I'm going to have to leave you at 4:45. I don't know if my colleague can stay on a little bit longer, but just in terms of managing the questions, I have about 5 minutes remaining today.
Yeah, if your colleague could stay with us a few more minutes, that'd be great.
Thank you. Doris, go ahead.
Yes, can you hear me?
Yes. Yes.
Okay, just making sure. First, I want to say that I think some of the discussion here makes it very important to mention that we need to ensure that the audio announcements are adequate and improved, and that the messages starting from the beginning are clear, because the maps and all of that are fine, but for many of us can't use the digital displays, any standard maps and whatever. And then the second thing is that I understood with the new cars coming on, we were going to be fixing a concern. Well, one of the concerns is the between car detectable warnings. But in addition to that, the footlights on trains that are bright, high intensity LED lights. And some of them the same in the 7000 series cars that are, you know, lighting the interior of the car as well, but particularly the footlights need to really be fixed, because they present a barrier in identifying that identifying the train doors and lighting your way in. But nonetheless, the use of high-intensity LED lights is problematic. And just over the weekend, I heard a BBC show that was on NPR regarding this effect, the effect of the high-intensity lights, and just involving how you're how uniquely everybody's iris filters light coming into your retina, and how there no one sees the same as anyone else, whether they have a visual acuity functional limitation or not. So I think it's important to pay attention to that as the way light affects our ability. And the last thing is about the cameras and operator looking out the window or whatever. We need to make sure that that's in place, because, you know, even now, sometimes I know when I go to get on a car, because of changes in the lighting between the station itself, because there are some changes in coloration with all the digital stuff they put inside the stations and such.
Darsh, go in a minute.
Well, I'm just about to finish. That sometimes I have to hesitate when. One, I have to look very closely, and then I have to hesitate before getting in a train, and I'm scared to death now of those train doors closing on me, because they have.
And if you could have your colleague chime in, since you have to go.
So, of course, the feature in the 8 case, that last your last comment that I think will be helpful is a light over the door that indicates opening and closing. And I think that's an added effect that will be helpful to customers. I know that it's challenging sometimes to know when to expect the doors to close. The other thing is that we are...
Well, and whether you're lined up with the door.
Right. And the other thing I would just add for the committee is that the automatic door feature for opening is going to be expanded to other lines. We got approval today from our partners at the Metro Rail Safety Commission to expand our certification of operators to other lines. And so you'll be hearing more about auto door openings on other lines. And what I think that does is it doesn't change the speed, but it makes it more predictable when the doors are going to open. The closings are still manual, but the openings are more predictable for the rail car. So there's that. I am going to have to jump, but what I will say, Mr. Chairman, is that two things. Stan has a couple more minutes to stay with you, and then Anu can email us any questions that the committee may still have, and we'll follow up with you. But I really appreciate your time today, and thanks for having us back and for the continued input into this process. And I so look forward to you guys going through the display, and I'll be down there for many of the days that we have the public exhibit, especially in the first week. And so I hope to see many of you there and to hear personally from you what your experience is going through the soft mock-up. So thank you.
Thank you. Sure, many of us will see you when we're there. Thank you again. And maybe Stan can now answer questions that arise.
Chair Carabia, just like Lynn said, that he can stay for a couple of minutes. Vanessa, I see your hand is up. If you would take 1 minute and answer a question, that would be great.
Alert. Audio now unmuted.
Okay. Hi. Thank you, Anu. I kind of had the same questions as Ms. Doris about the timing of opening and closing of the door, but since that's been addressed, how about the gap? I use a cane, and has that gap between the platform and the train itself been closed, you know, a little closer? Because that makes me nervous trying to feel for, you know, getting up from the platform into the train. Then to, I understand there's a spacing for mothers with cart, you know, with the children and luggage. Can there be an announcement or something made for those that are sighted to move closer to the center so that if a blind person comes in, they know they can get closer to the door, they can sit in those areas? I don't know if that's favoritism or anything, but is there a way, because as a blind individual trying to find an open space, you know, it can be kind of cumbersome. Thank you.
Sure. So to, to address your first question, there is a standard that WMATA has in terms of a gap in between the car and the platform. The car width itself is essentially a standard that we have that involves us designing to the clearance envelope that WMATA has. We can certainly look into it. There is a threshold plate that does extend slightly further out to try to reduce that gap. As far as the announcements goes, for those that you know, may want an announcement to accommodate the which areas are best for them, I can certainly look into it with my team to see whether or not that can be added to the automatic announcements when the train arrives into the station.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you. Next question,
Chair Carabia, if you have a quick question or comment, go ahead, and then we can wrap up the topic.
Sure. With respect to the fact that these would be married pairs of two, and then a gap, as in the old kind of trains we've had up to now, and then married pairs of two, and then a gap. In recent weeks, we've had reports of train surfing. And here in the Washington area, two teenagers were train surfing and were killed in the process. I don't know when teens are going to get over this crazy stunt business, but if, as Lynn mention possibly in the future we can go get through to all trains being open gangways. That would reduce the space in between trains in which some of these surfers go and some go from there to climb to the top of the train. So I hope that's still in the planning or in the thoughts of the team, that down the road, maybe we can fix the train centers where the trains are maintained so that we can have full open gangways, not these gaps between every two trains. Thank you. And that's it, Anu, did you say?
Yes, we can. That was, you were the last person with your hand up.
Okay. Stanley, I didn't see your name. Well, I see a name, Soy Stanley. Is that you?
That is me.
Okay. Well, if you could give Anu your email address. Appreciate it. Thank you.
Yeah. Any questions, any remaining questions from the committee can be emailed to me and I'll forward them to the team. Thank you, okay. Stan.
Sure.
Thank you.
Thank you, everyone.
The next topic, Chair Calabia, is the Arlington County team. And I know we have Diane Trent, we have Paul Monnier and Kirk Dan to speak about updates on the floating bus stop. So Paul, or either you or Diane or Kirk would like to share your screen, or would you like me to do that for you?
Let me try to share my screen. Sure. If I can't, I will ask you for it. Thank you. My name is Paul Meunier. I'm a white male. I wear reading glasses and I'm 54 years old. What we're going to talk about is filling bus stops today, and the process we went through to develop a set of standards, how we're working with WMATA to implement these services, and talk about a few of the implementations that we have coming up. With me today is Diane Trent, Kirk Dand, and Kevin Cassidy. Diane is our bus stop manager, Kirk is our WMATA liaison, and Kevin is one of the lead engineers working with the implementation of installations. So let me try to share my screen quickly. All right.
We do see your screen, Paul.
Yep. Okay. Oh, okay, hold on. Sorry. Oh. All right. So this the first slide is just an introduction slide talking about island bus stops in Arlington County. Island bus stops and floating bus stops may be used interchangeably as we go through this. This is where the WMATA Bus and Rail Subcommittee. The next slide has a diagram of a floating bus stop in the upper right-hand corner. It shows that the bus stop has a island where the bus can serve passengers, and a bicycle lane that travels behind the bus. This is a diagram from NACTO guidelines. So it's just an example. The text says the floating bus stops are dedicated waiting and boarding areas for passengers that streamline transit service and improve accessibility by enabling in-lane stops. The second bullet says floating bus stops are separated from the sidewalk by a bike channel, eliminating conflicts between transit vehicles and bikes at stops. For buses, boarding islands allow the creation of accessible in-lane stops with near level or level boarding. The next slide is titled Arlington Bus Stop Guideline Development. The text is a list of the different guidelines and standards we use to help start our development of floating bus stop guidelines. And the text reads, Guidance for Arlington County's Street Design and Operation, American with Disabilities Act, ADA, Public Right-of-Way Accessibility Guidelines, PROAG, Manual on Uniform Traffic Control Devices, MUTCD, the Arlington Master Transportation Plan, Arlington Transit Bus Stop Designing Guidelines and Standards, WMATA's published guidelines, 2023 Guidelines for Design and Placement of Transit Stops, 2023 Bus Priority Toolbox, 2019 Bus Stop Amenity Reference Guide, and 2017 Station Area Planning Guide. And the final document is the NACTO Transit Street Design Guide. All of these were consulted and elements were used to make sure we were ensure that we were complying with all standards. The next slide is titled Arlington Bus Stop Guidelines Development Listening Sessions. We made several, we met with several different committees and commissions around the region in Arlington County and outside Arlington County. As we were gathering information on the development of guidelines, we started with a Arlington County, in September of 2021, Arlington County met with Montgomery County, Matt Johnson, who had been working with accessibility in Montgomery County and had some good information on floating bus stops. 10-12-2021, WMATA Bus and Rail Subcommittee, Accessibility Advisory Committee, which was when we came and met with this group. 10-19-2021, Arlington County Disability Advisory Commission. 10-21-2021, Arlington County Transit Advisory Accessibility Subcommittee. 01-24-2022, Arlington County Commission on Aging. 01-31-2022, Regional Standardization Working Group. This was a group put together by WMATA. 02-07-2022, the Arlington County Bicycle Advisory Committee. 02-09-2022, Pedestrian Advisory Committee. 05-10-2022, Transit Advisory Committee. 07-19-2022, Transit Advisory Committee. Annual Capitol Tour, we took a visit to an installed treatment, a floating bus stop that we have at Wilson and North Pierce Street. 12-14-2022, WMATA Right-of-Way Design and Safety Planning. This was another group put together by WMATA to talk about standards. April 06-2023, WMATA Regional Bus Stop Guidelines Workshop. And in February of 2024, we did post an updated version of the Arlington's Bus Stop Guidelines and Standards Manual that has standards for floating bus stops. And I do see a hand. Do we want to stop for questions or do we want to keep moving?
How many more slides do you have?
There's quite a few. But some of them are just examples. I have probably two or three more before we get to the examples. I can go through the examples quickly and then we can.
If you can go through them very quickly, because there are, at least I have a question.
Okay. If you can...
Yes, quickly.
All right. Through those listening sessions, we did hear the community concerns. On this slide, there are three main concerns that we heard consistently over all the meetings. There is a need for mitigation of the conflict between pedestrians and bicycles. The second one is wayfinding for individuals with low vision. And the third thing that we heard is there is a need for regional standards for the construction of floating bus stops. We have tried to address this. We have worked particularly with the regional standards, worked with WMATA and regional partnership with our other agencies and partners from Maryland and Virginia during the development of floating bus stops. We have worked on the mitigation and we've worked on the wayfinding. And like I said, we do have some examples here that we can take a closer look at. And as we move forward, I can go back to this. Applying existing, we have a slide with moving forward, applying existing guidelines to new design installations, review new relevant standards as they emerge and apply them as appropriate, update guidelines with necessary, and coordinate with WMATA on installations in the county. And then there is a list of our floating bus stops that are active within the county. So that is all my slides, if you would like to go ahead.
I didn't know about the workshops that WMATA had at all, and also with you. I wish we had known. Some of us would have loved to have been part of the workshop. but the whole idea of bicycle paths has been of importance to us. And I'd be curious as to how the bicycle advisory or the bicycle organization you met with felt about the design of these things, trying to accommodate them and their speed, as well as being careful for pedestrians, including people with disabilities. What was their reaction to your, or did you get into any discussion with them?
The bicycle community is very supportive of these. They are very supportive of protected bike lanes in general. And this is a way for a protected bike lane to continue even through a bus stop area. One of the things I will note is that the recent legislation, previously it was yield to pedestrians, vehicles need to yield to pedestrians. One of the things that is now part of the element is that there is a stop bar and a stop here for pedestrian sign that will be installed on these also. And I am showing a slide with Walter Reed Drive, Complete Streets, a bus island on southbound Walter Reed Drive at Fifth Street. I am highlighting where the stop bar is and the sign that says stop here for pedestrians. So that is one of the elements to help with the speed and people going through without paying attention.
Have you considered having some sort of rumble strips in the bike lane so that when they come, they get shook up so they don't shake us up by just whizzing through as they often do?
We have had discussions about that. From my understanding, the rumble strips aren't appropriate, but what we could do is put markings that are raised that would provide a tactile response. And I don't know, Kevin, if you're on, if you wanted to talk about that a little bit.
Sure. How's it going, everyone? My name is Kevin Cassidy. I'm a white male in my 30s, wearing a t-shirt and jeans. As Paul mentioned, we did look into the concept of rumble strips. So one of the concerns with rumble strips is, as most people kind of perceive them, is they're divoted in the road, and that could actually end up having kind of an adverse effect on cyclists, where they might lose control, especially when we have them in these kind of narrow areas. You know, that could be a safety concern in itself. So we are looking into installations of paving markings, which they are raised. Our thermoplast and our MMA, the green colors or red that you'll see in bus lanes, can be applied in bike lanes as well. And from a cyclist perspective, you do feel a little bit of a bump. The difference, though, with those is, unlike vehicles and rumble strips, there's that auditory portion, especially because of the speed of a vehicle, that you would not get from a cyclist running over these markings. And you know, again, there really isn't too much guidance with it, so it's a little bit of a like influx on how that design would be laid out in the field.
But there's some vibrations that they would note as another way of telling them to slow down?
Yeah, so they would feel that, as well as, again, there's a combination of other things that are being installed on or at least as part of the standards. So there's the stop here to ped sign. And again, that thermo for the stop bar also has a raised portion to it so that you'd feel that as well. And then there's another path that aligns with the bus flag that is a raised flush crosswalk. So that has a mountable portion where the cyclist would have to go up. So there are a bunch of other visual cues and design elements that really should make them stand out from a cyclist standpoint.
Well, we're familiar with the concept of visual clues, but in my observations, bicyclists don't really observe the visual clues. They need something more to get them to understand that, hey, you got to slow down. Let's see. The other thing is, where are scooters and e-scooters allowed here? Are they expected to go in the bike lanes?
So e-scooters are allowed to use bike lanes. They follow similar rules as long as they, they are for regulation and they have the correct speeds. I guess something to note as well, that both bicyclists and e-scooters are legal on sidewalks in Virginia as well. There are some exclusions to that, but the intent behind or one of the intents behind this type of facility is trying to make a multimodal approach, making it safe for everyone, where we don't want cyclists ending up on sidewalks, really kind of creating that delineation. But scooters would be included in those, in the bike lanes.
In the bike lanes,
mm-hmm.
But they're prevented from going on the sidewalks.
Scooters are not prevented from going on sidewalks.
Because they are in downtown Washington, D.C.
Correct.
Not in a ring of Washington, D.C., but within the business district, they're prohibited from going on the sidewalks in that part of D.C.
Yeah, and in that part of D.C., cyclists are prohibited as well, but there's no such laws in Virginia for that prohibition for cyclists and e-scooters.
Members of the committee, do you have any questions or observations?
This is Anna. So we have Steve Kaffin, followed by Doris Ray, and then Patrick Sheehan, and I believe there may be other members with their hands up, but Steve, go ahead.
Thank you. I would just like to concur and accentuate what Tino mentioned regarding the not visual but physical notification to bicyclists as they're coming to a crosswalk that they need to slow down. The problem with just the visual is that I've watched bicyclists as they move across the Washington, D.C. streets, and they're looking closely at the signs that say how many more seconds they have. And if they think they can make that light, I've seen them try. They're not looking at a stop sign or anything, but it's so important what Tino said, that there be something that they feel. In fact, I would have them feel it twice. I would have them feel it as they're approaching that island area, and just before, or just kind of before that crosswalk where people are crossing. I had a situation where it could have been a very serious injury, where I was in the right in crossing on 14th Street from an island to the sidewalk, but there was a bicyclist who was looking straight ahead at trying to make the light. So, please heed what we're saying. One last thing, I think Pat may bring it up, or I think Philippa also. The question is, because we've had these presentations before in different venues, how does a person who is blind or has a vision deficiency know that it's an island rather than a bus stop at a curb?
Can I hear that question again, please?
So, yeah, I'll jump in to take part of that, at least. The, in terms of the wayfinding, that is something that has been being discussed as part of the region, and I think there probably are some things that could be expanded on. One of the challenges is that Arlington only has one of these actively in, so we're trying to implement some of these in order to take some of that feedback. But from where we are now in terms of the design, we're implementing linear guiding strips. They are similar in terms of detectable warning surfaces in terms of the material, but they have grooves in them to help guide you to a location. And every stop will have those included at least in one of the two crossings. The one that's shown on screen has those linear guiding strips shown on the flush crossing, which is the one that for cyclists is raised. So they have to, there's that slowing aspect of it. And then it leads them directly to the bus flag on the island side. For the other one, this one's not a signalized intersection location. I don't think, Paul, I don't think any of the, sorry. Do you have the example at, Clarendon and Pierce? Is that?
I do not have the clear.
Okay. So for the locations that are included, or if for locations that are at signalized location intersections, the floating bus island would have the APS buttons per PROAG and MUTCD regulation. So that would have the sound portion of it as well, but also in combination with these linear guiding strips.
Someone else has a question, right?
Yes, Doris, and then Patrick, and then Sandy. So Doris, go ahead.
Hi, this is Doris Ray, and in addition to being on this committee, I am a member of the Arlington County Disability Advisory Commission. And we haven't seen you all in a long time because we had some initial, when you all came, about floating bus stops, we had some initial concerns. Some of the concerns, most of our concerns aligned with concerns raised by the AAC, particularly the crossing over the bicycle lanes. And so we've not, when you had a tour, the usual tour for the Transportation Advisory Committee, we have not had such a tour, and we haven't seen you in a long time. So we're real concerned about that. I'm concerned about the installations going in Crystal City and whether they are completed, because the Crystal City intersections are more dangerous than in terms of the amount of traffic that's coming through there, certainly at certain times of the day and during the midday and during the rush hour. And then also I think things are compounded by the fact that Arlington County has decided to utilize pulse sound traffic signals rather than spoken word traffic signals. And in fact, the spoken word traffic signals that were existing in places like Boston, I believe, are being removed, as I understand it, in when new installation or an updated installation is done. So all of these things are concerning. The Wilson Boulevard first installation was at a much less complicated street and pedestrian right-of-way intersection, and I'm concerned that many of the installations may be in at some point in mid-block rather than a crosswalk. And again, tactile warnings when people are crossing, when blind people and other folks are crossing from the sidewalk to the island are of concern with me. So we hope to see perhaps an update from you all before these installations are made, but could you let me know, are there installations that have gone in since you were last at the DAC and at this committee?
So none of the ones that have been installed have been installed by Arlington County. So part of the situation we're in is that these have some of these designs have been incorporated into site plans years ago, and we don't have control of when a site plan will go into construction. And they will build those off of approved, the approved site plans back when they did get them approved. So one of the things that we're trying to do is get to a point where we can publicly and include these the newer floating bus island standards as part of our typical design, so that we can have those conversations with site plans and put them in for new ones as well. And
but you're continuing to put them in, right?
Arlington County has not put any in so far, besides the one that was at Wilson and Pierce. We had a design that was moving forward at Wilson and Rhodes, which was going to be our first implementation of the newer standards, but that has had changed and grew in scope to a capital project in the interim. And the next next one up that was on our list of trying to implement was Wilson Boulevard and Pierce's kind of coupling stop, which is on Clarendon Boulevard and Pierce. And that one would have been Arlington County's first install with the newer design standards. Again, part of the whole process is with new implementation, we like to implement and see what that feedback is and where we can improve, where we can retrofit. Lessons learned, and then be able to transmit that forward to future site plans as well.
And just to clarify for the AAC, it is my memory that the ordinance on micromobility devices allows them in the bicycle lanes to travel up to 6 miles an hour, right? Or is that what it is on the sidewalk?
Yeah, 6 miles sounds a little low. I don't know the mileage off the top of my head, but I think it is faster than that.
Patrick?
Hi, this is Pat Sheehan, white male, 71 years old. I've been working in Montgomery County on these types of projects for about 8 years, particularly with Matt Johnson. So we've seen a wide variety of installations. The ones that concern me the most, as you've heard the last couple of speakers say, is the mid-county block installations. We understand that if you're putting them in existing intersections where you have the accessible pedestrian signals, that if you hold the signal in for 3 seconds, it will announce to you that you have and I'm hoping this is the case, that you have a bicycle crosswalk with a bus island in front of you. That would be part, as I understand, I'm not an ADA expert, but that would be part of effective communication, indicating to a person that the bus stop has been, a blind person particularly, that a bus stop has been changed, moved out into like almost like the first lane of traffic, about eight feet out. Block installations still need to have effective communications. And I also believe under ADA, it says that you have maintenance of existing facilities. So moving the bus stop out without an APS there that's going to tell me that that has been moved violates both of those, effective communication piece and the maintenance of existing facilities piece under ADA, I believe is Title II. The guide strips, although that's kind of cute, doesn't tell me anything. All I know is that I understand what they are, but it doesn't tell me that the bus stop is at the other end. For someone who's visual, they can see it. Someone who's low vision, they can see it. But I need to be able to understand with the, particularly with an APS, which is going to have an arrow pointing in the direction that I'm going to be pointing, that I've got a floating bus stop out there or bus island out there, you know, 5 feet away, or, you know, whether it's 5 or 8 feet away, that I can then, you know, utilize to cross to that bus island. Also, it would be useful to, for that to say that, you know, not that it's safe to cross, but, you know, that, give me an indication that there is a signal that is going to help stop the bikes. My second question is the, what did you call it? The stop bar, that I'm not quite sure what that is. Is that like a painted line on the street or something?
The stop bar for cyclists, yeah. Yes.
That's painted?
Oh, it is painted with thermal.
I was kind of hoping we would get the stop bar like they have for trains. That would be nice. That would stop them. I didn't think I was going to get that, though. But I understand that in Montgomery County, they are not installing any more mid-block bus islands because it's just too complicated. Or the installation of, you know, the APS has to be put in there so that I know that the, you know, so that you maintain effective communication and also maintenance of existing facilities under ADA. Thoughts on that?
So Montgomery County is testing out some other ways to help trying to control that. DC has, I mean, a whole kind of different design. But in terms of maintaining existing ADA, as long as everything that's per design adheres to ADA PROAG, that is still considered maintaining existing access, or in some cases improving it, because some of these locations do not have existing ADA stops.
Right. We so understand, you know, PROAG is recommendations, though. It hasn't been, you know, signed off on by DOT or DOJ.
It has not been, it's been passed, but yeah, they're still waiting that last right. piece of approval.
Right, they certainly are. But yeah. Under ADA Title II, how do you maintain effective communication with just guide strips that are planted on the side of the sidewalk? What's that tell me?
I mean, the same thing for an existing crosswalk where the detectable warning surface tells you that
at an existing APS where I can push the button in on the APS and hold it in, it's going to tell me that I have a, that there is a bus island in front of me. At least that's what we're doing in Montgomery County.
Yeah, so that, you said in an existing APS. These, some locations do not have existing APS.
I know, but my point is, if you're going to take the bus island and put it out into the first lane of traffic, then you need to install an APS that's going to maintain that effective communication and maintenance of facilities that's under existing ADA Title II.
Good point, good point.
So, I mean, in Montgomery County, they are not installing mid-crosswalk, you know, bus islands out there because that's not, you know, it's kind of too complicated. If they can move them up to where they have an existing accessible pedestrian signal, they can program that, you know, and then individuals will know that you have a bus island that has been moved from the sidewalk area, let's say, out to the first, you know, 8 feet out to the first line of traffic. That's the other thing that bothers me is we're getting a hodgepodge of designs. And so as I go from Montgomery County, Prince George's County, and then I go into DC, I've got a whole other range of stuff. And now it looks like if I'm going to go to Virginia, I'm going to get a third set of configurations. How am I supposed to know as a blind person what I'm up against?
Right.
Anyway.
So the intent of the regional committee is to try to get these designs in line as much as possible. Again, DC and Montgomery County have installed quite a fair number of these. Again, mm-hmm. Arlington only has the one currently. And the floating bus island guidelines that have been developed are bringing those in line with Montgomery okay. County.
Who's heading that regional bus committee? That regional installation committee? Who's heading that?
Oh, that would be you know if there's an actual head to it, or is it just the meeting between DC, Montgomery County, WMATA, and Arlington?
I guess what I'm wondering is, you know, I'd love to be part of that because I've been working on this in Montgomery County with the transit people here for about 8 years, and actually this is the first I've heard of that. So that's a great opportunity to help. And, you know, it might feel like I'm pointing fingers, but I think it's important to be sitting in at the beginning stages of this right now to see where we can get as much uniformity as we possibly can. I mean, that's the bottom line. It's not a point fingers and say you should be doing better. It's more yeah. of a let's get some users in there because the disability community is really, really interested. It's the blind community. This is a real problem for them. And it has. You know, an effect on WMATA. If we're going to see a lot of floating bus stops, then right. I'm not going to feel safe crossing to get to them, and I'm going to take metro access. That's not what WMATA or the local jurisdictions want.
Kevin,
anyway, if we could get that information to Tino or Anu as to that committee and how stakeholders can participate.
Anu was at the table. Right. This is Kirk Danz. I'm a white male. I work for Arlington County. I'm the WMATA Services Coordinator. Mm-hmm. Anu was at the table for right. the okay. regional committee.
Okay. So, but who heads that committee?
I don't remember off the top of my head. It was put together by WMATA.
Okay. If we could, yeah. I mean, I think it would be great to have, you know, configuration. Uniform configuration with that committee. I would very much like to get involved in something like that.
Pat, this Anu,
is that something that we could put together to get them involved?
Yeah, I was about to say that. I will check on it, Patrick, and you know.
Okay. Oh, that's great. Okay. Appreciate that. That's a great idea.
So we are a little behind schedule, 5:27, and I do see Sandy. You have your hand up. I hope the team can maybe stay for another couple of 2 minutes and answer any questions Sandy might have. Kirk or Paul?
I could stay.
Yes, we can.
Right. So Sandy, we'll take your question. That'll then we'll wrap this topic. Thank you.
Hey, hi, this is Sandy, white senior person. Can you go back one slide to that diagram you had of the bus island? Or maybe it was two slides. The one on Wilson. Okay. So as I understand it, if there's an audible pedestrian signal at the corner for the crosswalks going across the streets, that one could use that audible pedestrian signal to get to the bus island safely as a blind person. But my suggestion would be, and I realize this costs more, so it needs to be under consideration, but I believe in terms of uniformity, and I don't know that Montgomery County does this, the other crosswalk, the raised crosswalk across the bike lane to the bus island should have an audible pedestrian signal and a red light to stop, to signal to bicyclists when... And I think that should be automatically triggered when a bus pulls up to make it safe to cross to the island. And there should be an additional opportunity to cross to the island, you know, as a pedestrian when you get there and you're going to go out and wait. But when the bus is there, that should have a red light for bicyclists. I know nothing is 100%, but whatever it takes to stop bicyclists, I would suggest that in the uniform standards, even though it would cost more money. Just my comment. And Patrick, I would be happy to help you lobby for bus island issues. Thank you.
Thank you.
Kevin, your response? Kevin?
For specifically on the red light portion of it, part of the challenges for some of these locations is that specifically this one is not located at a signalized intersection. So there really is, a lot of constraints in trying to get signalization. There are also other standards that might conflict with. There's an aspect of driver confusion if you have a red light signal that's kind of just sitting on the side of the road that could be confused with a traffic signal if the intent was to only control the bike movement. There's other design criteria that would all have to come into play as well.
Anu, your involvement in this, has there been anything issued? Somebody said something was issued, but what is the something, and can we get a hold of it if there is something that's been issued?
I can, Tina, I can check on that, and any information I can share, I will definitely.
Great, thank you.
Thank you.
Any other?
No, so we are at 5:31, and we do have one more guest speakers to talk about another topic. Take any further questions through emails.
Could I quickly say one thing?
We are quite behind, and I would really appreciate if you can email your questions, and I'll be happy to share those with the teams, because we do want
I wanted to make the statement. We do not have spoken. Arlington County has decided not to have spoken word traffic signals. They've gone to PULSE, which are meaningless, particularly when you're in a situation like Crystal City.
And, wow.
Yeah, so that's one thing. And number two, if there's going to be a regional meeting with disability groups, I would hope, I would volunteer, and I would hope that you would invite, particularly if it's about Arlington situation, as well as other jurisdians, that the Arlington Disability Advisory Commission would
be. I'd like to be there too, as well. Maybe even Patrick. Yes, thank you, Doris. Thank you for that suggestion. Let's move on to the next topic. Stroller, open strollers.
Well, thank you, Paul, Kirk, and Diane, and Kevin for coming and sharing any update about the floating bus stops in the Arlington County. So thank you. I would stop sharing your screen. Okay. All right. So next we have Mitch Harris. Mitch, I would start sharing the screen. So give me 1 second. Okay. And I believe my screen is visible.
Yes.
Perfect. So Mitch, the floor is yours.
Thank you. Anu, this is actually the last slide. So if we can jump to the beginning. I want to thank also the subcommittee for allowing me to speak this evening. I know it was on kind of short notice, so I appreciate you accommodating me. I'm Mitch Harris. I work for WMATA's. I'm working on WMATA's team that's sort of developing this open stroller concept. I'm a bald white man with glasses. You can jump to the next slide. So the team at WMATA launched a policy to allow customers to bring open strollers onto buses. And we got a lot of positive feedback about that. Caregivers really appreciate not having to collapse their strollers and then carry a stroller and a child in their arms while they're on the bus. But we have noticed that this creates a lot of crowding in the front priority seating area of the bus. as you now have carts, strollers, and more and mobility devices all trying to use.
Maybe we'll do that.
This one designated area. And we've noticed that there's also some confusion about who should have the priority to that seated area, and who has access to that limited space. Additionally, even if there aren't those sort of face-to-face conflicts, having all these different objects in this one area can create a tripping hazard or create dangerous situations for passengers with mobility issues who must navigate through this congested area. And we've, because of these conflicts, we have started to receive some complaints from customers about this open stroller policy and about open strollers inhibiting passenger circulation in the vehicles. So we thought that it would be good to try and alleviate some of these problems. And with that, we decided to create, we're going to try to create a new designated area for open strollers. This will get the strollers out of this priority seating area and leave it open for those that need the priority seating or need to use mobility devices. And we also hope that it can improve the general passenger circulation and reduce the conflicts over these types of spaces. Next slide. So we are building off of strategies that have been employed in some other metro systems, including in New York, who recently launched an open stroller area on, I believe it's on about 1,500 of their buses. And so again, this is just creating a designated area where customers can keep their, where customers who have open strollers can get those objects out of the way of other customers. Next slide. So this is a diagram of the current seat layout for the majority of WMATA's fleet. This doesn't reflect every single vehicle, but this represents about 90% of the vehicles currently in the fleet. So a couple of things we wanted to highlight. We ultimately, in working with bus maintenance, we identified a pair of seats that could be removed to create this extra space. On this diagram, there's seats 6 and 7, but the numbers are just to help us sort of reference where things are. These are a pair of seats on the, what I guess would be the passenger side, but the side that doesn't have the driver, the right side of the vehicle. They're the second row of forward facing seats. This proposal would not in any way change the location of the priority seating, either the aisle facing 7 seats in the very front of the bus or the 4 forward facing priority seats. But this would also create in this new open stroller area would allow passengers with strollers and carts to be seated behind those items. And so they'd be able to face the stroller with the child. We do want to note that our research has indicated that the WMATA fleet actually has a lot more seats than our peer operators. So most WMATA buses have 40 seats, where the industry standard seems to be closer to 36 or 37 seats. So removing these 2 seats would reduce the seated capacity. We believe it'll raise actually the overall capacity if no strollers are in that area. And we believe that there will be better passenger circulation regardless. So we don't view this as a capacity reduction, but it would also bring the total number of seats more in line with our global peers. And then I believe the next slide just has an example of the signage that we plan to put in that open stroller area. We wanted to make it clear that strollers are the priority in this area, and wanted to give some guidance to customers who would be bringing strollers on that the child and the stroller need to be totally within their control the entire time. So that's my very brief brief presentation. I'd love to hear any feedback or questions from the committee.
Great. Thank you, Mitch.
You know, maybe 5 years ago, WMATA had a person who was working on open strollers. She came to us. This was many years ago, pre-COVID.
Okay.
And we said that the DC Circulator has long had an open stroller policy, and would she check with them? Mm-hmm. Has any change been made in the DC stroller policy, and how does it differ from what you're recommending here?
So I can't speak to exactly the policy that the circulator uses, though I know that their interiors have a much more open layout than WMATA buses. They have far fewer seats and have mostly aisle-facing seats in the lower portion, like the front lower portion of their vehicles. So especially with the flip up nature of a lot of their seats, I think it was easier for them to implement and to make sure that the strollers weren't in the aisles. So I wasn't here 5 years ago, but my understanding would be that when we first came to this committee, we were essentially proposing to have this new policy of allowing open strollers, but we weren't planning to make any changes to the interior configuration of the vehicles. And so this reconfiguration is sort of not an adjustment to the policy, but us trying to make sure that the policy works for everyone equally.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Chair Calabria, this is Anu. We have two people with their hands up, Steve Kaffin and Doris Reyes. So Steve, go ahead.
Okay, thank you. Thanks. Hi, Kim. I'm not crazy about the idea, but I want the why is more important than the cause. I ride a lot of buses, and morning, noon, and night. And I would say maybe 2 in 10, from my experience, have strollers, you know, strollers. And I know exactly what you're saying, that New York photograph is exactly what transpires when there are strollers, and it's a you know, it's an obstacle course to get through, and you do your best you can because you've got little ones that you're passing. My suggestion would be a seat that goes up, and the reason why is for those 8 out of 10 trips, there are no strollers. To just add another empty area to buses that often get packed, and they're going to get more packed as more and more companies open, and the government maybe opens. I don't, you know, you're taking something away, and it's most of the time it's not needed. The third concern I have is these strollers are going to have to move through a good portion of seats. And as you know, that aisle is very narrow right now. And some of the strollers may struggle just to get that to that open area. And the bus is going to stay put until that stroller is in place. So for those three comments, at least consider the convertible seats that can be pulled up, have that sign so people know that's for strollers. But for the 8 out of 10 where there are no trips where there are no strollers, people can sit. Thank you.
Yeah, I really appreciate that feedback, Steve. I think a little more context that maybe I should add that I forgot is just that these reconfigurations are for our existing fleet. So they are just for, right now it's just one bus that we're going to try out and sort of see how it works. But going forward, if we get positive feedback, we would only reconfigure our existing fleet. Going forward with new vehicle purchase, with new vehicle purchases, we'd be able to explore a lot of alternative layouts where maybe we have just a single row of forward facing seats or the flip up seats that you mentioned. We'll have a lot more flexibility as we start to purchase new vehicles.
Why is it complex to just not put in convertible seats? If you know, it's the exception on buses right now where you have strollers, and we certainly want to accommodate strollers, and there's no place for them in the priority area in the front. But to take away seats for the 8 out of 10 rides when there are no strollers, what about just seats that go up and down that will serve both purposes?
Steve. Yeah, so unfortunately for this project, we didn't want to purchase any new products. So we didn't want to go out and try and procure new seats, which would have opened up more possibilities. So this is just looking to remove seats that we already own. In addition, by removing that one pair of seats, we're actually going to create a lot of additional floor space. And to your point, that won't always be taken up by strollers, but in crowded situations, that'll create more space for standees, which will actually increase the capacity of the vehicle. So we think that this will have the added benefit of improving passenger circulation, even when there aren't strollers there. And I would also want to point out that this area can be used by customers who have carts or luggage or other large objects that they want to bring with them on the bus. So it's not just strollers, although we are envisioning making strollers the priority in this space.
Okay.
Next.
Mitch, I believe Anthony or Mira, I think they were trying to add some comments. Anthony or Mira, if you'd like to add anything, go ahead now.
Go ahead, Mira.
I think Mitch covered everything that I was going to say. Just want to reiterate, this is for one bus. This is going to be an iterative process. And once this bus is deployed, if any of you happen to ride on it, we'd love your feedback to see how it actually works. We're going to be touring the bus next Monday and going with the stroller just to see how the flow works. So I just want to assure everyone that we are making sure that we're covering as much of our bases as we can with the resources that we currently have with this project as well.
Great. Thank you.
Bill and Lars.
Dr. Posner, go ahead.
Yes, thank you. I'd like to agree with Mitch that what we're really talking about on the bus is mobility devices of various sorts, ranging from canes to walkers, plus strollers, plus shopping carts, plus luggage. And there is always going to be a major conflict because the large items like strollers, shopping carts, and luggage make it difficult for everybody to move through the bus. And so I suggest when you put these on, there will be certain buses and certain routes that will get the changes. And Steve's idea of the flip-up seats is obviously the best. That's the one that exists in the district on the circulator. So there aren't fist fights, knife fights, or gun fights, depending upon the neighborhood, as to who gets to use the luggage spot, the stroller strut, the shopping cart spot, or the people with a disability in mobility. And so I know this is for the future, but it's important for you to take a look at what the routes are. What routes go to shopping centers? What routes are in residential areas? What routes go to hospitals? What routes go to dialysis centers? What routes have a lot of Metro Access customers in them? And then make decisions as to which routes you use. But I do recommend, as someone with mobility devices who also carries a gun and a knife legally and always gets my priority seating, it's nice to put it where it's needed, because there are a lot of other people that don't have the ability I have to get my priority seating without the help of the bus driver. Thank you. I've used my 2 minutes.
Thank you, Dr. Posner. Mr., do you want to make any comments? Or?
Just real quickly. As Mira mentioned earlier, this is just one bus right now. It'll be limited to the routes that are assigned to the particular garage in which the bus is kept. But the vision would be to eventually have designated stroller areas on every vehicle. So whatever special circumstances exist for those routes, they would have this designated space available to them.
Great, thank you. Chair Calabia, it is 5:50. We have not started our public comments section yet. And I know that at least one member of the public has comments to make.
Yes, please. Okay. Garth, you wait. Yes, Anu.
Mitch and team, if we could just pause for a couple of minutes and see if we have any public comments, and accordingly, either we can come back to the topic or see it. Depending upon,
just stay on as long as you need.
Great, thank you. So officially we are beginning the public comment section now. Mary Kay, I know that you had your hands up for public comments. Go ahead and make your comments, and we do allot 2 minutes for public comments. Any other member of the public, if you'd like to make comments, please either raise your virtual hands, and we can take your comments after Mary Kay. So Mary Kay, go ahead.
Thank you for having me. In the past, we had talked about having adjustable height seats on new train cars. And I couldn't tell. I liked the diagram a lot, but I couldn't tell if that had been included, if that was still in the mix. And I just wanted to put that out there. We had talked about some disability seating not being high enough for wheelchair transfers, and other, on the other hand, being too high for people with short stature as part of their disability.
So are you referring to train seats, or are you referring to bus seats?
Train seats.
Okay.
The open gangways.
All right.
Yes.
Mary Kay, I will make a note of your comments, and I will share this with Lynn and her team. And the response I receive, I will share that with you.
Thank you so much.
And Mary Kay, you go to the mall when the train is there. You could also speak with Lynn.
Yes, so very excited.
And just to state that the mock-up is going to be for 2 weeks, starting March 20th. Okay, any other members of the public who have who would like to make comments? All right, that tells me not. So we can return to the topic. And Doris, I see your hand is up, so go ahead and unmute. Okay, you are unmuted. Go ahead and make your comments.
My hand was raised for the preceding item that was on the agenda.
Yes, we have returned to that topic, so go ahead.
So I've ridden buses all of my life, even including when I was the person in the stroller. So I want to say first that the seats in the front of the bus and the designation of the accessible seats is a separate issue from priority. That is accessibility, and it's required in the designs of all new buses since the ADA came into effect with regard to bus service. And so that has in my mind, first priority, and then after that, the strollers. And the idea of testing, putting them behind the accessible seating, is, you know, I maybe should be piloted, but I also have the idea of, are there any buses that have low floor ramps on the back door? And if there were, since we've been talking about entering the bus from that back door, I would think that the most logical thing would be to put stroller seating there. But to the degree that that's not available now, my concern is not constricting the aisle. And then the second thing is, I, as a deafblind rider of buses, am concerned about sitting close enough to the front that I can hear the annunciator. And unless we're going to start turning up the volume on the annunciators, which are not always loud. They're not as loud, for example, as Fairfax Connector buses, at least in my observation. And some of the Dash buses have similar annunciators to the ones that are used on Connector. So that also is accommodation, to be able to have the front, that set of front-facing seats, so you can make sure you can hear and respond to, you know, by pulling the cord for a stop, the annunciators. Those are my concerns with the allocation of stroller seats, and I know and recall very well getting on buses with my mother, who was blind, and her having to fold up the stroller so that we could sit in the front. So just some thoughts for what you're doing. I'm not sure exactly what the solution is, but I hope you will investigate the idea of backdoor loading.
Thank you, Doris. I believe Anthony is trying to make comments to you.
Anthony Harris, Black Male, Mitch's colleague. So thank you for your feedback. It's very valuable. And rear door boarding is absolutely something that we are exploring now that we can do fare payment that way. So we will look into that, look at solutions, maybe advocate for even better ways to get more people on the rear door boarding more comfortably, which would also help to mitigate the prior concern, right, that doing front door boarding with the stroller could have somebody actually moving through more congestion. So thank you all for your feedback. We'll take it all into consideration as we continue to work with different offices throughout Metro.
Thank you.
Okay, that is the end of anyone's hands up. No other person has their hand up. Chair Calabia.
Very good. Well, thank you, Mitch and Anthony, for your presentation. And also, I guess I'll have to take a DC circulator. I haven't done that since pre-COVID. I'd like to know what their experience is. Maybe they can chat with you all or even with us about their experience in this matter, because they've done open strollers for years and years. But thank you again, Mitch and Anthony. We look forward to hearing from you again. It is now 5:59. Do I hear? Yes.
Before adjournment, I just want to state that anybody who would like to make public comments can email at metroaacchair@wmata.com or call and leave a message at 202-962-1100. That concludes my announcement. Thank you.
Thank you. Do I hear a motion to adjourn?
I'll make that motion, Tina.
Second.
Second.
Hearing no objections, this meeting is adjourned. Thank you all very much. Thank you.